Thanks again, Kevin. And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Demetrius from Long Beach.
Wow. How much do I owe you guys for that? Like, welcome. I'm like, wow. My name is Demetrius. I'm an alcoholic. Man, it's good to be here, man. You know, it's a big event going on in Long Beach this weekend. You know, we got the Grand Prix. But I experienced my own on the way down here tonight, thankful of Corey, my driver. I mean, we were doing it, man. It was exciting. I was calling out lanes. We had the little Waze app working with the cops, and I was like, you know, we were making it happen. So I really want to thank him for dinner tonight and driving me, and his dad's in town, and it's just so neat to have a guy that I sponsor be able to get to his house, and he made me dinner and play with his son and, you know, commune with his wife, and his dad's in town visiting and sleeping in his guest bedroom, and we're able to come down here to this meeting, and, you know, it's just a warm feeling, even though it was a scary ride. And Corey knows, I think he's, like, not my best driver. He's, like, you know, he's my go-to guy because he's willing. But, man, he was busy. It was fun. So, and then I need to apologize, you know, because I feel most comfortable when I'm getting here about 20, 30 minutes before the meeting. You know, I'm like your family is. I'm nothing like you. No, I'm just joking. No. You know, hey, I'm a guy. I like to shake hands and talk to people and do that. And then I feel relaxed and I feel a little more comfortable. And I apologize for not being here like I normally would like to. And, miscommunication on my part, my fault. And I want to thank Damon for inviting me to come down, and Larry probably nudged him or whatever, you know. And he invited me a long time ago, you know, and he kept calling and kept making sure. And you guys got a dynamite group, you know. I'm really excited about the action. You guys get excited, you know, over anything, you know. It's just like whatever, you know. You just get a little fired up. So I got a sobriety date. It's February the 7th, 1989. And I got a home group. It's the Bellflower Big Book group. A lot of you guys, some of you guys come all the way down and you join us on Monday night at 7:30. And we're a group that's full of enthusiasm, and we respect Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're a structured group. And our group is I'd say about 70 to 80% of our people attendance of the group is their home group. And when you have a group with that type of structure embedded in it, it's linear of sponsorship. So you got a lot of people doing the same thing. And I need that for myself, you know, because I don't need to be out front. I need to follow the guys that have paved this road for me. And then I'm, you know, maybe 7 out of 10 times I can do the right thing. And I'll still screw up, you know, almost 30%. And I've got a sponsor. His name was mentioned. His name is Johnny H. And my sponsor is out of town this weekend, and he's doing a retreat, and he's reading a book with a group of men, and he's way more active than I am, you know. And he's been sober for multiple decades, and he's a damn good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he respects this program. He's a very, very busy man in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can respect that, and that's what I need, you know. My sponsor's not my marriage counselor. He's not my financial advisor. He's not my therapist. You know, he's an example, good, bad, or indifferent, that he could stay sober through problems, and he's somebody that I trust to come to, you know, when something is, you know, is not right with me, and I check in with him regularly, and I'm grateful for that. And, you know, I was taught to share in a general way. What, I don't even need to look at my watch. This guy's going to give me a 10-minute thing, a 7-minute thing, a 5-minute thing, a 2-minute thing. You know, I'll be so busy looking at those little white papers, I'm going to forget where I'm at. You know, but you can hit me at like 5, and I'm good. You know, I'm serious. I mean, even if you want to hit me at like 1 minute, I will stop. I swear to God. To you hear me? I'm like, boom, I'll sit down. And he'd be like, man, well, I want to fight. You guys be like, I wonder what happened. I drank. No. So I was taught to share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and the man that I am today, you know, good, bad, and different, man. Give it to you raw. you know, uncut. Just tell it, keep it real, you know, and I'm not afraid to do that, you know. I'm not nervous in any way, shape, or form, you know. I don't get concerned when I come to speak before you people, because when I look out amongst you guys, all I see is a bunch of drunks, you know, a bunch of people just like me, you know. I don't care what we do in the world today, you know. I know that there's nothing different about us, you know, and I'm comfortable with that, you know, and it just really lets me know that I'm in the right place and I have nothing to worry about. Maybe if I blow it, you won't ask me back. It's a hell of a drive. And I was here when you guys first started, man. I was like, man, they got something going over there, man. This place is doing it. And if you're new, you know, I want to welcome those people that did set up. I saw you. I was here. I was in the back. I was hanging out half measures row. I was back there. And I heard, you know, 10-minute speakers, and I saw the birthday people and the 90-dayer chip taker. And if you're in a group like this, you're lucky, man. You're absolutely lucky. And I'm not saying this just like as a pitch to get you to come back. You could go wherever the hell you want. I mean, literally, you know, but you're lucky to be in a group that's enthusiastic, that respects the program, that's fired up about Alcoholics Anonymous, the coffee's made, the room's set up, you got a prudent reserve, you know, it's going on, you know, because there's a lot of meetings out there, and you guys are really, really lucky, and I'm lucky for that as well. So back to my story here, how it goes. So I'm this guy, and I'm so grateful for this program, because this program is about self-knowledge, you know, to discovery of self, not self-knowledge, but discover who am I, you know, who's rolling with me, you know, when I'm all alone, like, oh, who's that guy, you know, I really need to know, you know, and because I've been living behind images my whole life, my whole entire life, and I could fall back into that even with 25 years sober, and through a process of these steps, I've been able to know who I am, and, you know, my friends pointed out, my sponsor tells me, you know, he tells me I'm a piece of crap, and I'll not amount to anything. He told me the other day. You know, I called him on Thursday, I'm like, hey, sponsor, he goes, what's up now, dude? It was funny. But anyway, so in a general way, you know, here's how it goes. So I'm this guy, right? I'm always a little bit restless, a little irritable, a little discontented. I'm always looking for action. You know, I love excitement. You know, I mean, I'm a guy like at a funeral where people are mourning and I'm trying to like make people laugh, like liven the party up, like turn on some music, you know? And so that's me, right? And so I grow up in this house. It's my mom and my sister and myself. My mother is one of 11 children. She's second born. She had 9 little brothers and sisters. So you can imagine growing up, she was a busy lady. And my father ran with her 6 brothers. You know, he was one of the guys that ran with her 6 brothers. And all the men in my life were these hustler type guys, you know? And they ran around the streets of L.A. and they committed mayhem. And guys like us, you know, these alcoholic guys, I don't know how they do it, but how we do it, we always get the nicest, the most, you know, the greatest woman. And my dad was able to do that. He married my mom, and by the time I was 2 years old, my father was off doing another prison term. And my mom knew she didn't want that life for herself, and she set out to build a better life for herself, going to school at night, working a couple of jobs. And I was this kid, right? I'm 5, 6 years old, and it's a Saturday, and I'm restless, you know. I'm irritable. I'm discontented. My mom's folding clothes. My sister's in her room doing her thing. She's a do-gooder. I'm in my room, you know. I'm, like, wondering what's going on. So I put my little gun belt on, you know, my little pop guns. I got my fake little leather chaps. I put my little vest on, my cowboy hat. And my sister's in her room. She's got her Barbie townhouse set up. It's perfect. Ken's rolling up in the vet to pick up Barbie for a lunch date. She's got a little tea set with all her stuffed animals around with a little fake tea set. Her bed's perfectly manicured. It was made every single morning as soon as she got out. Every stuffed animal, every pillow had a place. That's my sister, right? And I come in her room with my pop guns. I'm like, blam, blam, blam. I'm knocked down the tea set. I'm disrupting the townhouse. I'm stomping on Ken's Corvette. She's screaming, Mama, Mama, get me out of here. And my mom says, leave your sister alone. I go in my room. I take out my little Evel Knievel, you know, wind up thing. I'm like, wind him up. He's running through the house. I look at the window. I'm like, oh, yeah. We live behind an alley, you know. I open the window, take the screen off. I'm shooting him out the window, you know. It's good for a few times. You got to run all the way around the apartment, go grab him, bring him back. And I do that for about 5 minutes. I'm still restless, irritable, discontented. I'm underneath my bed, you know, I got a book of matches, sounds like a good plan. I start lighting the fringe underneath the bed, and it's going up, and I'm watching it, it's like, you know, shooting stars, but they're going up, you know, and it's like, whoa, I run out of matches, and I'm outside doing something, you know, and next thing you know, my room's on fire, and that's the way I am before I even take a drink. And I'm always, you know, just like looking for action. I need it. Let's get it going, you know. And I still can get like that today, you know. No matter what time I wake up, you know, do a half a minute of prayer, a little bit of meditation, and turn the radio on, you know. I mean, like damn, you know, I should be listening to jazz. I'm almost 50, you know. And it ain't happening. You know, but this is it, right? So my mom, she's working hard. She's doing this thing, and she meets this guy. She got a job at the school, and he's what I call an L7. And you hold up an L, you match it with a 7, he was a square. He was nothing like any man I'd ever seen in my life. All the men that I seen, my uncles and my dads, they were hustlers, you know. They grew their hair out, they straightened it with a hot comb and or a perm, they put rollers in it, they wore silk everything, they wrote Cadillacs, they popped their gum when they chewed it, and they snapped their fingernails, they grew their nails long. I'm serious, you know, they moved their hands a lot. They were just out there doing it. This guy, he drove a Maverick, it was a four-door, it was green. He had the shoes with the pennies in them, the angel flights, the coat with the patches on the elbow, a tweed tie. I can remember when he came over. It was like a shocker. I was like, what? And he started courting my mom, and they got married, and we moved to this little town called Cerritos. You know, it's a little suburban town. And I instantly had two stepbrothers and a stepsister. My sister fit right into the family. I did not fit. I'm in the fifth grade. And I started going to this little school, and I'm doing my thing, and I could tell you guys this, that my uncle was always there for me. He was the guy, my father's brother, that was, my dad wasn't ever around, and he was always there. He started taking me camping at a young age, and he would take me to some of the most beautiful places around. And this time in particular, the time I took, you know, one of my very first drinks to get me drunk, he was taking me up to Yosemite, and he allowed me to bring a friend. And he had just gotten married to my beautiful Aunt Ida, and we're up there, and the first day we're there, we go cross-country skiing, and we had a great time. And we're bedding down because the next day we're going to go snowshoe hiking. And here's a kid that's laying in the bed, man. I'm with my uncle. And this time we're in these little joining cabins. We weren't roughing it like we had always done. He brought his wife along. I got my buddy Drew. And I'm next day I'm going snowshoe hiking, man. You know, we wake up 5:30, you go and you meet up with the group, you go snowshoe hiking. And I'm not thinking about drinking it. Andrew's just like me, a little restless, irritable, and discontented. He's like, "Meet, man, let's get into something. Let's get into something." I'm like, "Drew, chill, man. Tomorrow we're going snowshoe hiking." My uncle loved me so much that, I mean, our trip was planned. You know, he took time to plan. On the way to this vacation, he took out a present. And this was at Thanksgiving, and he handed it to me. I opened it on the road, and it was a Swiss Army knife. I mean, this guy was so considerate and so thoughtful that he bought me my Christmas gift in, like, you know, September maybe or October, and gave it to me around, you know, Thanksgiving time. I'm like, whoa, you know. And Andrew's hitting on me like, let's go. And Andrew hits the door, and he comes back a little bit later with a 3-liter jug of Tyrolean wine. And I'm going to tell you guys how I get down, because nothing changed from the first time I really embarked upon drinking, and it characterizes my drinking career. You know, Andrew comes to the door, and he's got a 3-liter jug of Tyrolean wine. And I'm laying in the bed in my PJs not thinking about drinking. I'm thinking about snowshoe hiking with my uncle and my aunt the next day. I'm not thinking about it. But as soon as he comes through the door, this is how I party every single time. He comes through the door, and I grab it. And the first thing I do is I look up. I'm like, "Where'd you get it?" He was like, "Man, I was out walking around. I found it in the snow." See, because when you're going to party with me, I always was in control of the issue. If it was at Steve's kegger party, I always managed to be the keg master. You know, I know how to do that. You stand by the keg long enough, whoever's working the pump, he's got to pee eventually, you know, and then you the pump. You know, next thing you know, you got the stem, and I'm giving everybody their issue, and I'm always that guy. And then the next thing I do is I sit down on the bed, and I can remember rubbing the bottle of wine, and I romance that drink. And this is a kid that wasn't thinking about drinking. And I told Andrew to retreat to the restroom, come back with 2 Dixie cups, and something else happens to me. I can remember cracking the seal on the top of that. It was a fat body, a long neck, a big green hook at the top, and a big black cap. And when you open it, the seal cracked. And I could remember the sound, and it was ice cold, you know. And I romanced it. And he says, like, where'd you get it, Drew? And he tells me again, and I said, all right, he got two Dixie cups. And I pour him one, I pour myself, and something else happens to me when I drink. Whenever you party with me, you're going to drink just like I drink. And I force the drink upon my fellows. And I go, drink, Drew. And he takes a drink, I take a drink. I pour another, pour myself another. I'm all, drink, Drew. He takes a drink, I take a drink. And that's what I do. And we took three little Dixie cups. You know, we didn't even drink the neck. And something else happens to me, and I never wanted to be this guy. You know, I always wanted to be that guy like my Uncle Jack. You know, he get, you know, good and loaded. He wants to pick all the little his nephews up and throw you up in the air and chase you around the yard and give you a quarter. And he was just happy. He didn't have nothing, and he was just a happy guy, you know. But me, I take out this little Swiss Army knife. I got a couple of little drinks in me. I always wanted to be cool, you know, a little gangster living in Cerritos, you know. I know. I got a 10-letter name, Demetrius, right? So I take out this little knife, and I figure I'm going to tag this room up, right? You know, I'm going to carve my name in the bedpost, you know, and I get through the D, you know, and the E, and the M. By about the fifth letter, I'm burnt out, you know. I'm like, dang, you know, I need like a cool nickname. It could have been like D-Loke or D-Money, you know, or Killer D or something, you know. So I start cutting the curtains in the room, and I get violent when I drink, and I get obnoxious, and I get wild, and this is what happens. And here's a kid that wasn't thinking about drinking, and I control the drink. I force it upon my fellows. I get violent when I drink, and then I knew I had to protect it. You know, my uncle was right next door. And I fully got dressed. I put the wine underneath the bed. We go back out there, and we got a six-pack of tall cans of Budweiser. We came back to the room, drank one beer apiece. Then I went back out in this nice community. I took this little Swiss Army knife, and I started threatening the Good Samaritans around this place. Here's a little punk 12-year-old kid walking up to people, threatening them with a Swiss Army knife, cutting people's tents while they're sleeping in them, slashing people's tires. From my very first drink, I got drunk. From my very first drunk, I got arrested. And from my very first arrest is when I began to get those looks from those people that really, really care about you. The ones that give you strong names, give you every opportunity in life, enroll you in sports, always give you positive affirmations. That look where they're like, how could you? And I can remember my aunt and my uncle, when they brought us out, you know, to read our law charges, they had court that next day on a Saturday. And they said everything that we had done. I did. You know, I didn't even let Andrew bust a tire, you know. And my uncle looks at me, and then he gave me that look, you know, that our loved ones give us when we just really are screwing up. Like, how could you? And the only thing I could do is look at my uncle right back in his eye like, what? It's my life. And that's what I started to do to the people that cared about me. When I wasn't doing right, I didn't cower my head and be like, oh, I'm going to do better next time. I look at you like, what? It's my life. And I knew when I got home, nothing was going to happen to me. That trip was cut short that day, and we were supposed to be there for 5 days. And we drove all the way back home, and when I got out of the car, I knew my step-pops wasn't going to do nothing to me. You know, I'm 12 years old. My mom's going to spank me. Like, really? You know? Are you going to say something to me? You say something to me, I'll call my father. He'll hop in his caddy. He'll ride down to Cerritos. He'll tear the whole block up. And he would. And I say it all the time, what? You know? And that's how disrespectful I was to my parents. All the time. And I knew when Andrew got home, I knew he was going to get beat. And this stepdad that I had was the principal of my high school. And I go to school, and I just start drinking every single day, but nothing changed from that moment on. And I'm going to tell you guys, here's my character. As a result of that, I had restitution. All I had to do was go visit my grandmother every single month. She would hand me $60. When I left, they gave me a stack of envelopes with postage on them and the address. All my grandmother, my mother wanted me to do was put the $60 in the thing and just drop it in the mailbox. Lick it and drop. I didn't send one payment. Never one. And I go to this little high school right down the street, Cerritos High School. This man's my principal of my high school, and I'm do well in sports, and I do well in school. I'm drinking, I'm partying. By the time I'm a senior, I get kicked off the basketball team. I start hanging out with these guys called the PWBs, the Pisswall Boys. We hung around behind the school and we drank beer and everything else and we peed on the wall. You know, so hence the piss wall boys, you know. But we knew where all the parties were. And I can tell you, by the time my graduation rolled around, my parents had bought me a real nice suit. And I showed up for my graduation, scummy as could be. And I remember when I walked across the stage to get my little diploma, all my friends were out there. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm drunk. We've been at Boca Chica Beach drinking Bacardi 151 all day. You know, who plays quarters with 151? In the sand, you're like, it was crazy. You know, and I look at my step pops and he gives me that look and I look at him like, what? And I go down on the field and my brothers are all home from school. My stepsister's home. My sister's home. My grandparents are there. My father is there. All my aunts, my mother's brothers and sisters. I mean, it's like a 40 people. And mom's like, hey, come home, son. We got cake. We're having a party for you. We're so proud of you. I'm like, mom, it's my senior night. Give me my cards. You know, Frank's having a party. You know, it's my night. How do you expect me to come home? Take your pictures. Cheese, cheese. I got a roll. And that's the kid that I was, you know. And I'm going to tell you guys, man, from that moment forward, it wasn't no sooner, maybe less than a year, I'm, you know, tore up. You know, I caught myself looking at myself in the mirror, and that's a dangerous place for a guy like me. And when I caught my eyes in the mirror, I looked at myself and I said, you're nothing like your father. You're way worse. And I was barely 19. And I went to my first facility. It was called Sierra Tucson. My parents went to drive me out there, and we checked into a little hotel the night before. And before we went to go, you know, the next morning, I went and knocked on my parents' door and asked them for $6. I asked for $6 for some, I could go across the street, get some cigarettes and a beer, mom. And I said, I'm going to go in the morning. And my mom handed her baby boy $6. And I went across the street, got the beer, and I drank it. And I did go in the morning, but I can imagine how hard it was for her to give her son that. And that's where I was introduced to you people. And I never wanted to be an alcoholic. Absolutely not. And I didn't stay sober from that very first introduction. But I'm going to tell you guys, you know, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and for me, I had to get rescued a few years later by the Orange County Police Department. And I always thought I was a tough guy, you know, but the real truth of the matter, I was a punk, you know, don't get it twisted. You know, I was a purse snatcher. I like to call it robbery, you know, but I was a purse snatcher, you know, and then like if you look like, I would not snatch your purse, you know, I was like, she's going to catch me and kick my ass, you know, I'm like, no, you know, you had to like ding near B in like a walker, you know. I'm like, no, you know, she probably ain't got no money, you know. That's what I was. I was a punk, right? So I do my little time. I get out. I'm ripping and running. I get sober. I get clean. And, you know, I was another member of another fellowship. And I won't mention it by name out of respect for our traditions in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But nothing really changed in my life. And that's real. And I came to Bellflower Big Book Group almost with 5 years of sobriety. And I met a man. His name is Bob Decker, first and last name. You know, he's passed on. And that man was the one that was beginning to change my life, you know. And I watched him walk across the front of that room. And when I looked at him, he looked like a square. You know, he looked real handsome, man. I mean, his hair was done. He had the shirt with the little horse on it, you know. And he had the shoes with the penny in it. And he had the Dockers on. And I got like almost 5 years. And I come to the meeting. I got some creased down Levi's, maybe a white T-shirt. You know, or a Fila sweatsuit. I got a pager with no service, you know. But I would rock that, you know. And I would hit the button, you know, like, you know. I kept a battery in it, but had no service, you know. I had a dried up Jerry curl, fake gold chain, you know. I'm full of images, you know. No driver's license, no insurance. I never even thought about insurance, you know. And none of that, right? I mean, this is how I was rolling. I go play pickup basketball, get in a fight. I'm like, dude, it was a foul. He's like, no, it wasn't. All right, we can't solve this without fighting, you know? And that was me. And I saw Bob and my friends, you know, Mark M. He encouraged me. He's like, man, you need to get with Bob. I'm like, whatever. And I approached Bob. And I started following this man around. That's all I did. Monkey see, monkey do. I just got in the car, man. Got in the car. He encouraged me to do some steps. And I was like, whatever, man. He was like, man, you got to get writing. And I wrote my inventory. And I can tell you guys this, man. I gave this man my fifth step underneath a light in his car outside the parking lot of one of our meetings. I felt like it was a setup, right? And I'm telling him it, man. And he'd look at me, he'd be like, "You did that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, Bob." And he was like, "But, like, that was, like, 2 years ago. You were sober?" And I'm like, "Yeah, Bob." And he was like, "Okay, keep going. I tell him something else." He was like, "Oh, you did that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, Bob." He was like, "Oh, well, that," I was like, "I know, Bob." And then I was like, "Man, you're supposed to make me feel better." And he goes, I mean, I can remember. And he goes, "No, I'm supposed to tell you the truth. Keep going." And I kept going. And I kept going. And by the time we was done, here's what he told me. He said, "Man, you need God." And I said, "Bob, I got God. You know, you can't be black and Baptist, raised by all women, and not have God. It's just not possible. I know y'all don't know nothing about it out there, a couple of y'all, but I mean, it just don't happen like that. You know, you black, you grow up in my type of family, it goes down, you know. Over a meal, it's like a 10-minute prayer, you know. You be eating popcorn and bake it on the oven. So it's like this. Oh, Father, I got to close my eyes. Oh, Father, Lord, Jesus, Almighty, Rapha. It's like six names for the same person, like, all at once. And I'm like, "Bob, I was raised with God." He was like, no, you need a God of your very own. And he directed me to page 86, 87 in our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Forever grateful. You know, he called me out straight up. He said, "You need to go backwards, man." And he suggested that I start reading this non-AA approved books, 24-hour day book. You know, it's Hazelton. And he suggested I do it on my knees in the morning. I open the book on my bed and I read it word for word, and I do it at night. And it tells a dummy like me verbatim. And as a result of taking that inventory and giving that man my inventory verbally, I realized some chunks of truth about myself. I saw that my life was consumed with fear in every single area. But if you knew me, you would say, "Man, he's low. He ain't scared of nothing, man. That dude's crazy." You know? But the truth, I'm so afraid of everything. Period. You know? If it was going to go down, I always threw the first punch. Because I'm scared. You know? If there was, like, I needed a job, no, I can't go get a job. I mean, my oldest brother, he graduated from Rice University, football scholarship. He works in aerospace. Like, okay, I can't go do that. My other brother, Texas A&M, he's got some big to-do job. My sister, Cal State Fullerton, she's a translator and a teacher. I can't do that. My sister, UCLA, what am I going to do, really? Like, so I just don't go. I'm like, no, I'd rather hustle. You know, I'll paint your curb, you know, for $5. True story. I mean, serious. I mean, I'm scared. You know, girlfriend? No. Like, I can have girls, but a girlfriend, like an intimate relationship, somebody that really knows me, if she really knew me, she's going to leave me. Right? So, I can't ask her to be my girlfriend anyway, period. No, I'm a player. You know? That you just scared. You know? That's me, really. That was me. I was full of fear every single area of my life, you know. And as a result of doing that inventory, I saw this in black and white. It was clear as a day. And I went backwards, and I started to do this on my knees, and I started to get some power, man. And it was crazy. All I was doing was going to my group, following my sponsor, doing what he suggested. He suggested, like, "Man, you know, I had this little bitty job." And I used to hustle, man, and I always had money in my pocket. I had a little bitty job. I was working at the Gap, and I was a waiter. And I swear to you, I always had more money than I did when I was out doing anything that I shouldn't have been doing. And it was crazy. I was like, "Man, how do you still have money from, like, 2 week ago paycheck?" You know, it was crazy. Like, your check was $230. Like, where did this come from? And I just started doing all these things that was suggested for me, and I continued to take the action within these steps and what was outlined in this book, and I got committed in my home group. And within my group and all the guys that I ran with, because I ran with a group of guys, you know, we were thick. You know, I'm talking young and sobriety, and we were wild, and we were obnoxious. And a majority of us all came to my group. It was wild, you know. I was looking, it was just crazy, right? and I'm just doing what my sponsor says, and I'm just willing, and I'm just doing it, and I started to get some power, man, and I started to develop this relationship with this guy, and things started happening in my life. This guy in my group said, hey, you need a job? I'm like, well, I got a job, but, you know, I could always use a better one. What you talking about? And he told me about a job, and I got hired, and like 9 months later, I was his boss. You know, and I was like, whoa, how does that happen? You're fired. No, I'm just joking. I still talk to him, though. It's a true story. I talked to one of the guys that I was their boss just today, and it was crazy. And I was one of the first guys to talk to him about AA, and he called me from Kansas today. And I'm like, how you doing with the drinking thing, man? And he was, you know, he has his own story. It was funny. Here's his justification. He goes, well, in the last year, I've only relapsed like 12 times. And I said, well, how much time do you have today? He goes, well, as of the 12th, I have 30 days. I said, well, you're well on your way. You know, but that's his deal. And so I get this little job, right? And I got promoted. And I had this girlfriend. Like, I've been stringing her along forever. I can't ask her to marry me. I can't support you. Of course not. You know, I'm like, I'm afraid to go to work and do anything. I mean, like, can't be committed. I'm scared. You know, I can't tell you about myself. You're going to leave me. And I got married to this woman. I was definitely afraid to have children. Like, what kind of pops am I going to be? What kind of dad am I going to be? I had this little bitty boy, and I just kept doing the drill, doing the drill. My life kept growing and kept growing and kept growing. And I'm going to tell you guys, it doesn't mean that my life is without problems. What it means is I'm able to stay sober through my problems. You know, doesn't mean I behave rationally and perfectly all the time, but the more, I mean, I grow. I mean, I've grown. You know, I'm definitely not the man that walked into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1989. Absolutely not. You know, I'm not the man that I was. I've been able to walk through some big stuff, you know, with my head held high. And if you don't really, really know me, you wouldn't even know that I got a problem or something that I'm going through. You know, because I'm not riding these emotional highs and lows, or I ain't got to just, you know, just be crazy about anything. You know, I have some balance in my life, and the promises have been able to be fulfilled in my life. And I know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. And I don't live in fear of financial insecurity or anything like that. And I'm not afraid of my past. And I'm able to share that with especially the men that I sponsor. You know, it's so valuable for me to be able to go through something for myself, you know, and be able to, like, the guys that I'm supposed to be the example and say, and they'll say, hey, well, how are you doing today? You know, what's going on? And I was like, oh, well, here's what's going on, you know. And not only can I share this with my sponsor or my friends, but the guys that I sponsor, and we're totally transparent. And it opens this door for this level of intimacy and friendship that is just baffles me. You know, it absolutely baffles me. You know, I'm crazy. I'm selfish. You know, self-centered to the core. I take mine off the top. Always. Like, I'm serious. I like stuff, right? Don't get it wrong. I'm selfish. I know this. You know, I work on that. I'm out of self most of the time. But for me, I wake up and my first thought is normally not of myself. You know, when I wake up, my first thought is normally of somebody else, whether somebody that I sponsor or somebody else. And I don't even know how that happens to a guy like me. Well, I do. I'll tell you. So as a result of this guy, Bob, being my sponsor and me doing what he had suggested, and my life started to grow. And, you know, I fell into this business in the mortgage industry, and I got this little company that my brother and I, my oldest brother, were partners in, and he decided to go off in ministry, and I was able to hold on to this company, and I was able to do things, and my life just started growing, you know, and I started feeling like, whoa, okay, you're on the right track, right? You're doing something now, you know. And my stepdad passed away, you know, 13 years ago, and when he passed away, I had long since made my amends to him. To him, because I was not a good son to him, and this man treated me like I was his blood-born son. You know, I mean, it didn't matter. You know, I mean, he had two boys of his own, but when it came to sports, you know, he was boom, right on the sidelines. You know, right behind the bench. You know, right at the finish line. You know, he was always there. If it was another bicycle I wanted, boom. You know, he called me son. like from the day he married my mother. And I always felt like, how are you going to call me son? You know, you ain't my father, you know. And I had long since made my amends with him. And when he got sick, you know, it was sudden. His death came in 33 days. And I was by him, by his side every single day. And I was able to amend that relationship, you know. And he and I did what he liked to do. It's called fried fish. And that's like sit on Second Street and look at women. He was like, you want to go fry some fish? I'm like, yeah, Pops. You know, he's like, I'll meet you on Second. I hung out at this place called Midnight Espresso. And we grab a coffee and we'd be like, look at her. I'm like, you know, I'm like six. He's like, no. I'm like, Pops, you're getting old, you know. He's like, no, she's a nine. I'm like, look again, you know. Yeah, I'm just like, I don't judge. But in fairness, that was a competition. So we're doing that. We're doing our thing. And when he passed away, I was okay. You know, I was right with him. I had done my thing. And this dad that was never around, when it was time for his life to change, it was my phone that rang. And I was able to call my sponsor. My sponsor called some of his boys, and he was able to be 12-step. He's sober for 10 years now. And his program doesn't work the way I want it to work. He does his own thing, but, you know, hey, you know. And I'm going to tell you, my sponsor, Bob, he relapsed. And he lived right across the street from me. And I watched him. And I was like, whoa, you know. And I'm going to tell you, when it was time for him to get sober again, it was my phone that rang. And I was able to 12-step my sponsor and carry him to the hospital. And he thanked me almost every, my old sponsor, almost every single day. And he couldn't continue to be my sponsor. And that's when I got my current sponsor, Johnny H. And Johnny became my sponsor. And I came from Bob Decker's group. Click or clan, however you call it, you know, and it's a whole different breed or genre of sponsorship completely, and I was knowing I couldn't be out here foundering by myself, and I knew Johnny was a solid, consistent member that was willing to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous, and maybe it was some things that I may not want to emulate within his character, but I knew that for certain, and I was able to ask him because he's way more busier than me. And he's been sponsoring me for like 14 years now, 13 years now. And as a result of that, my life has really, really changed. You know, it has grown. And I've got this closeness with this man that's absolutely beyond belief. And I love him dearly, you know, and I could crack on him and he can crack on me. And I respect my sponsor like no other. You know, and I'm so, so grateful for that, you know. And I'm going to tell you guys, this sister that I have, you know, I was the type of brother when she went to the bathroom in the middle of typing her paper, I'm the brother to pick your typewriter up, you know, with your term paper in it and take it to Checkerboard Pond. And I'm the brother that comes back 2 days later like, here's your pawn ticket, you know, go get it, it's a checkerboard, you know. Like, it's her responsibility, you know. And, you know, 13 years ago when she had her third board, son, she asked me if she could name her son after me. And that's the kind of attaboys that I need. That's the kind I get within this program. And my mother, you know, she doesn't make any type of financial moves before she without talking to me. You know, she runs them by me. And I have a relationship with this mom that's absolutely unbelievable. And I've got a son, you know, he'll be 14 on Cinco de Mayo. And my son is an absolute gem, you know. If any of you guys met him, I guarantee you he would look you in the eye, he'd stand up straight, he'd shake your hand firmly. He would have a good conversation with you, and when you walked away, you'd say, man, what a nice young man. And he is that, you know. He's a great kid, you know, advanced in everything, school and sports. And I just don't even know how something like that happens for him, a guy like me, you know. But that gives me a pat on the back, like, hey, kid, you're doing something right. And this is all the direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of that direction that I've got from my sponsor, Bob D, to build a personal relationship with your God, you know, when the financial industry came crashing down, you know, I wasn't left riddled with fear, like, oh, my God, where's my next check coming from? You know, I didn't wake up every single morning worried about how am I going to close an escrow, how am I going to get paid. You know, I don't live like that, you know, because of that relationship. And I'm going to tell you guys, you know, 7 years ago I fell dead on the sidewalk, full cardiac arrest. And I had 3 back-to-back heart attacks within a month period. And I had a couple of surgeries. And I was this guy that was riddled with this anxiety and this fear beyond belief. And because of that direction that Bob had given me, Johnny's mom was my sponsor, and I called him up. I'm like, man, you know, I've had the third heart attack. I'm probably going to die tomorrow. So I'm just letting you know, before I die, I'm sending a wife to fill the script. You know, it's for anxiety. You know, it's normal. It's expected. And he's like, before you do that, I'm going to have Glenn pick you up and take you to a meeting. And I'm like, whatever, I'll do it, you know, before I get the script, you know. So Glenn picks me up. He takes me to Charlie Street. And I'm sitting in Charlie Street. Corey loves Charlie Street. He'll take anybody to Charlie Street. He's always looking for somebody. He's like, dude, you're shaking. Hey, get in the car. He's like, I'm like, where are you going? He's like, I'm dropping a guy off at Charlie Street. He's like, where'd you meet him? I'm like, he's my counselor at school. I'm like, no, he's taking anyway. Charlie Street's like, I don't know if you know about it, but anyway. So I'm sitting in this place, right? Glenn brings me, and I'm shaking, and there's drunks everywhere, and they're shaking, you know, just wet, like detox, right? And this AA meeting going on. After about 5 minutes, somebody's, you know, leading the meeting. I'm like, dude, why is this guy leading? I'm thinking this in my head. I dare not say anything, right? You know, somebody shares. I'm like, what's he talking about in my head, you know? And after like 35, 40 minutes, I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, this meeting. Like, dude, what's he talking about, you know? And I started to be able to breathe, and I felt myself relax. And then, like, after a little while, I felt like I should have been running the meeting. It should have been a speaker meeting, right? And then finally the leader, he goes, hey, you know, you want to share? And I'm like, about time, right? So I give my share, and it's like, whoa, the room floats away, you know. I'm like, yeah, I feel really good. I walk out of there, and I'm like, yeah, Glenn, I feel all better. And I get home. I ain't thinking about filling the script. I call my sponsor. I'm like, oh, unbelievable. And I realize, you know, when I'm not thinking about myself, I am not experiencing anxiety, honestly. And I went to one little therapy session, and the guy goes, ah, you know, so when do you feel good? And I was like, when I'm praying. He's like, praying for what? I'm like, well, really praying for others. And he was like, oh, pray for others. And I, like, you know, jipped him off, and I left, you know. And that was it. And I got through this time, this fear-based time, through that direction. And I was able to, you know, come out the other side where I'm not living in fear, where I have my 5-year-old son and we're riding out to Lake Elsinore because I got him in a motocross camp and it's a 2-hour ride. And I'm thinking, Daddy's probably going to have a heart attack and kill me, you know? And I wasn't living like that no more. I'm not saying it don't crop up, you know, but all I'm telling you is this, as a result of building that relationship with God, I was able to get back on my knees. You know, I was to be able to accept life for whatever came around. If it was my time to go, I was able to accept it. And I wasn't like paralyzed with this gripping fear like, oh no, it's the end. It's going to end right now. You know, and I got a brand spanking good life. It's nothing like I want it to be because I always want more. But my life is good. You know, I'm at peace. And one of the best things that I've been able to experience is some moments of peace. You know, like I told you, you know, I'm that guy always a little restless, a little irritable, a little discontented. And when I can have these glimpses of serenity and these glimpses of peace to where I'm just totally relaxed, you know, and I'm just like, wow, you know, this is it. You know, this is life, the life that is supposed to be for me. I get this feeling, you know, and it just feels really, really good. So I'm going to leave a little extra 2 minutes for your secretary's announcement. I didn't want him to show me another sign. Phil, but I want to tell you guys, you know, no, seriously, for the new person, man, my wish for you is this. You know, I hope that you heard one thing. If it's only one thing, then I get you to go to another meeting. And, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm an example of Alcoholics Anonymous that you can stay sober since February the 7th, 1989. You know, and this program does work. So thank you for inviting me.